Hey, Kevin, what do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. Then you'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers. Reading to Strangers. No, that's a terrible idea.
Oh, hey, gang. Welcome back to another very special episode of Reading to Strangers. I'm joined once again by guest co-host, the illustrious Jeremy Maddox. Hi, Jeremy.
This is the ASMR special episode. I will be breathing lustily into the mic for the duration.
I ran into one of these ASMR girls on YouTube. And,
which one?
I don't know. I didn't pay attention to what her name was, but apparently, she didn't quite understand what ASMR is because she was just like role playing conversations. And I think what she thinks ASMR is that men don't pay attention to what women say. So they can just say whatever they want and dudes will tune them out. And the
just
act,
like real life.
The act of tuning, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what she thinks this is. And she just thinks the act of men tuning out what women are saying is ASMR, not the tones that are involved with the voice. And
was this girl Seafoam Kitten?
No, I don't remember what her name was. But anyway, the comments were just ripping her up. Like, are you retarded? Do you even know what this is? Why are you even doing this? Don't ever make another video like this again.
Oh man,
it was pretty funny. That's a weird little fetish, isn't it?
It's definitely fetishized. People can say all they want. Oh, I just do it to get to sleep. No, there. You have a woman whispering and lulling you into a stupor, a sense of surrender. No, there's a fetish aspect to it, and the best ones pretend that it's all innocent, but it is far from innocent.
Oh, they know what the fuck they're doing, don't they?
Oh,
those chicks
yeah.
are. I think the chicks are into it more than the dudes are. Like I said, this girl, she's just like role playing, like the waitress at the fast food restaurant. And it's like this 5-minute video of her being like, so what can I get you today? And, did you want fries with that? It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
why are you like trying to be a fetish model? Like you, like those chicks are into it. They are total, exhibitionists. And this is a way of like being able to do a sexual fetish on YouTube, which has a way bigger, wider, more mainstream audience than say a sex fetish site. So they definitely are like, and I guess they can make money off their ASMR videos by putting advertising on it. So they're like, they're definitely
into
it.
They have Patreons.
Oh, I bet. I'm sure they do.
listen. Well, I mean, we won't dwell on this too long, but one of the best ones I've ever seen. I mean, it even gave me a hard on.
Whoa.
It was about this girl who was like she advertises herself as it's a bit of a role play. She advertises herself as this talent agent, and you know, it's first person, so it's like you're the one, you know, sitting down to talk with her, and as the interview goes on and she gets you to sign this paper without going over the details in the fine print, slowly you start to turn into a puppet the way she explains it, and that she'll treat you better than she did all the others. And it's got this warped like nursery rhyme music at the end. And she says
Whoa.
That she's tying strings on your hands and stuff.
Whoa.
One of the best ASMRs I've ever seen. She does it with a low voice and everything, but I mean, it's like dark and like demented, man. That girl can kill with that voice.
Wow. It sounds cool. Yeah. It's a it's definitely a weird thing, man. But that we're not here to talk about ASMR girls. We're here to talk about reading shit, writing shit, publishing shit. Is Kevin Strange gonna quit? Man. I wrote some fucking post the other night. Got everybody's feathers ruffled as they normally do, right? I said I might be finished creating forever.
It really disturbs me to hear you say that, though. You
know? I know. It disturbed me because looking back on it, that was 4 or 5 days ago now. It's like I know what my intent was. I know the frustration that I was trying to communicate. I don't know why I did it on social media, which is fucking retarded to do. And B, I don't know why I worded it like that, because I'm never going to stop creating. So
that's more or less what Travis said.
I'm not 100% sure what I was fucking doing other than just being a depressed, mopey fucking drama queen, I guess. But we will get to that, and we're going to go into great detail about what I meant. What I said was I might be done creating. We'll get into what I actually meant and whether or not I'm going to quit the band, man. We're going to find out if I'm going to quit the band on the other side of the break. But you got a new episode of Quiet Place up, don't you?
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's got a religious segment, you know, where I talk about, religious stuff. And there's another segment where I talk to a documentarian who recently did a documentary feature on Mary and Dora about one of the most extreme horror films I've ever seen. Extreme gore, extremely disturbing, like real animal cruelty, horrible stuff, but... So you've got the religion, the extreme horror movie aspect. You've got me reading a performance piece of a Gary Busey story that I read at the Bizarro Showdown a few years ago. And I go over a very strange missing persons case with this man leaving a demonic growling voicemail to his wife. And it's the last time she hears him. And he was pulled from the lake 2 months later with no signs of struggle, according to the autopsy, even though there's clearly some sort of struggle going on in the voicemail. So I cover all of those things in this one episode, episode 7, and it's totally scatterbrained, man. It's ADD, and I love it. I love just going like full-on octopus and grabbing all these different subjects and pulling them into myself, and I just love that.
Well, what about the Bizarros?
What about the Bizarros? What else do I have to say about them?
But you have to talk about the Bizarros.
Oh, right, because I'm nothing without them. I don't have a listening audience without them. That was the old show.
Well, we're gonna start putting up episodes of the old show, aren't we?
We are, yes. And as a matter of fact, I sent that one over. Surreal Sermons was my old podcast where I basically did what Frank Edler is doing now on Bazong, where I just pick a different Bizarro author to interview every week. That's what the Surreal Sermons basically was, even though I was getting interviews of people like Fred Vogel and Stephen Biro in the horror genre too. But it was mainly focused on Bizarro authors, and I think that Frank Edler is filling that void that I left nicely, you know, but I'm not shy to say that I paved the way for that. Now, the first one that I sent over that we're going to flash back to eventually is on the website is the first part of when I interviewed you.
And yeah, there was go ahead.
There's a part two, which I'll be sending over. You know, this is not the first interview we did, but the second one. And it was so long we had to break it up into two parts. But you can kind of hear in this interview that I sent over the beginning of our frustration.
Lots of foreshadowing. Lots of foreshadowing, huh?
Yeah, and I believe the one thing that really tipped us off that something was wrong with this whole setup with artists being overreactionary all of a sudden. It was when people freaked out about some one-liner uttered by Tony Stark in that second Avengers movie, where he subtly, you know, totally offhandedly remarks about holding, who was the girl, Black Widow?
Yeah.
To some sort of forced marriage contract. It was some reference to medieval Norse wedding contracts where women have no choice in marriage or something.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember that? Do you remember how much of a grip the fucking sanctimonious moral left had on us? Because a lot of people, and I've said this all along, was as we started to fight back, as we started to push this this moral boundary back to common sense, you know, centrism, that they would pretend like they were never as crazy as they were. That's, you know, pretty peak crazy. Yes, they were even nitpicking Tony Stark. You remember when Joss Whedon had to deactivate his fucking account over it?
He had to deactivate his
Twitter account.
Over what? What were they mad about?
They just wanted another head on the pike. They just needed a fresh sacrifice. And now they all act like it was never like that. It's just a small group of extremists. All of the blame has been shifted to Antifa now that there's actually an organization that can be crazy and cause physical violence. They act like they didn't used to run the internet. They act like they
bitches did. They absolutely did. They practically stalked Joss Whedon during that time over nothing. And all of this shit is nothing.
It was Game of Thrones boycott over an off-screen rape that didn't happen in the books, therefore it can't happen ever.
That wasn't even that extreme a rape scene.
No. I mean,
they need to watch Irreversible.
Considering the kind of things that that other characters have gone through on that show, that was very mild in comparison. And you knew she was going to get back at him. You knew she was going to get back at him. So it didn't fucking, you know, it wasn't this thing of like, oh, you're showing her as the victim. No, you're giving her a story, a plot line for revenge for later when Ramsay Snow gets his comeuppance. That's all that was happening. It was a bunch of writers going into autistic screeching over it. It's like, you're fucking writers. You know that if they do this to her now, they're going to do something worse to him later.
Let me give you people a tutorial out there. If you're going to watch Game of Thrones, prepare for rape. Rape is imminent.
Prepare for rape, dismemberment, castration. you know, just the worst of the worst happens to both genders, happens to animals. It's a gnarly show, man, and that's why people watch it, because it's fucking gnarly. It's like watching a fucking it's like watching a car race waiting for the horrific accident. You know it's coming. I have a quick story about Game of Thrones, man. This cracks me up. Still to this day, it cracks me up. The girl I was dating at the time, when Game of Thrones was in whatever season the Red Wedding happens, the end of season three, season four, maybe, she didn't watch the show, and she didn't like overly violent shows, because she was in an industry that dealt with negative stuff all the time. And so in her off time, she liked comedies and stuff like that. She didn't like to get into like real dramatic, violent stuff. And I had been watching Game of Thrones religiously up to that point. And I had heard that the next episode was going to be a shocker, but I didn't know the context of it because I've never read the books. And so I told her, she was at my house that night, and I told her, like, listen, I know you normally watch this show. I don't want to get this stuff spoiled on Facebook. It's getting ready to air. Just watch this one episode with me. I'll explain who the people are. No big deal. And sure as fuck, if it wasn't the Red Wedding episode, and everybody fucking dies horrifically. And the episode's over, and her mouth is hanging open, and she's like, what the fuck? Fuck, did you just make me watch? I was like, I'm so sorry. It's normally not this bad.
It isn't?
Not that bad. Not that bad. Everybody died.
Well, the Red Wedding, the thing about that is in the books, I don't think that this made it onto the show, but in the books, I think it's at the end of Clash of Kings or Storm of Swords, They take Rob's wolf's head and stitch it onto Rob's shoulders. So it's like his wolf's head on his body.
Wow.
That's how harsh the books are in comparison to the show. Wow. It will enrage you. There are no safe characters, except for maybe Tyrion. He's sort of safe, but
so far,
yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, we got our own story to tell, don't we? We got to do Computer Face episode 6. Yes, it's still going. This is the longest audiobook we've ever done here on Reading to Strangers, or the other show we did, Reading to Monsters. This is our first sort of, and this isn't even one of my longer books. Jeremy here keeps telling me he wants me to do Texas Chainsaw Mantis as an audiobook.
Can't wait.
Man, that'll probably be 12, 15 weeks worth of material there. So anyway, Computer Face. Last episode, we ended off with poor General Zeiss getting the fucking nano dart, man. At the end of that battle, they thought that they had bested the Forge and the Thresher and all the different types of robot monsters. And turns out the only casualty taken was to General Zeiss. And this episode picks up where that left off. And we get to meet a new character named Admiral Lucas. And we get to find out the big sort of overarching plans of the Resistance human force. Does Computer Face actually have the coordinates of the Quiet Land in his head? We will find out in the next episode of Computer Face, coming up right here. And then after the break, we answer the question, will Kevin Strange quit the band? Will I take my ball and go home? Will I disappear forever? We'll see you on the other side of the break, gang. Bye-bye.
This is Jeremy Maddox, host of The Quiet Place. Has anyone ever told you that you have anger issues? It's okay, because so do I. And you can hear all about them every week on The Quiet Place. That's right, baby. I have officially moved into Strangeville's neighborhood, and there will be no sacred cows or taboos on this show. Tune in to KevinTheStrange.com to hear The Quiet Place, as well as Reading to Strangers and Watching with Strangers. Tell your easily triggered friends that we aim to offend.
Zeiss let the pin cap fall from his neck. His legs gave out from under him, and he fell to his knees, mouth agape. His eyes were wide and unfocused. He'd obviously seen this happen to countless other people throughout his years as a commander of the human resistance. "Stop the truck!" Uterus screamed. "No!" Zeiss croaked. Get back to the base! Get the coordinates to Admiral Lucas! Get the buses to the Quiet Land! Get the..." He gasped, prematurely ending his thought. His neck muscles tensed, and he turned his head back and forth as if trying to regain control over his own bodily functions. Uterus lunged at him and grabbed his hand, pulling him to her in a moment of compassion that Computer Face sensed was extremely rare for this scarred woman. Blood leaked from the commander's nose, and his eyes strained until they were bloodshot. He screamed, and his arms shot out in front of him like he was a zombie. His fingers all moved independently, and each one began to twist and pop at hideous angles, breaking their joints with preternatural force. His legs began to kick and jerk until his left hyperextended at the knee and his right rotated 180 degrees at the hip. Kill me! He screamed. For fuck's sake, kill me! Uterus grabbed him tighter, trying in vain to hold his arms down at his sides. What the fuck is going on back there? Mackenzie yelled, craning his neck out the window to get a better look at what was happening. He got hit with a dart, Computer Face said, not knowing what else to do. Oh, fuck me, Mackenzie said. His skinless face showed a look of terror as he sunk back into the cab, as though just being out in the air with his commander might infect him too. Zeiss's arms extended out to his sides, each broken hand grabbing onto a spot on the side of the truck bed. He howled in pain again as his arms began to twist and pull in opposite directions. Computer Face could hear the crunching of ligaments and tearing of muscle underneath the commander's tattered RDA uniform. Uterus, unable to conceal her tears, unholstered her magnet stick and positioned the prongs against Commander Zeiss's temple. With a sickening pop, both his arms tore free from his body, leaving his sleeves deflated. The arms flung themselves out onto the rubble-strewn road, and his legs began the same process. Then, Uterus activated the weapon, and the whole violent process came to a halt in her arms. Zeiss was dead. She sat there with her commander's armless, bloody body against her own, not moving or speaking for the rest of the ride. Computer Face and the rest of the crew sat silent as well, shocked, exhausted, and utterly demoralized, until finally the truck slowed and then stopped. With no fanfare, Trevor shut off the engine and simply said, "We're here." The soldiers climbed out of the truck. Uterus placed Zeiss's lifeless torso on the ground. Computer Face looked around. He didn't see any base. Trevor had stopped the truck at the edge of a densely forested area that sloped down dramatically at the tree line into a vast valley below. They were simply standing on the side of a road. "Where's the base?" Computer Face asked. As if in answer, the ground began to vibrate and then shake with force. Computer Face was almost convinced the Thresher had followed them, or that they were experiencing an earthquake, when he saw the tree line in front of him open up. Mackenzie noticed the look of astonishment on his glowing skull face. "Hello Imaging keeps the ones with eyes from seeing the cargo bay doors. Foot-thick lead walls keep their scanners from seeing what's inside. Arnold Finch had them built for the RDA all over the country before Adam Prime showed up. He was a paranoid psychopath, but he sure knew how to fight robots." Computer Face nodded as the huge doors finished opening, revealing a vast hangar inside. A tall, fat man struggled out from the hangar, flanked on either side by two even taller men carrying magnet rifles. The fat man was no older than 35, with short black hair that looked as though he spent most of his life wearing a hat on it. He wore ragged RDA gear like the rest of the soldiers, but his shoulders bore many insignia that Computer Face took to mean the man held a very high rank in the military force. His dark complexion suggested Hawaiian ancestry, but he was clearly American. He took a drag off a cigarette before throwing it on the ground in front of the soldiers. This had to be Admiral Lucas.
"The fuck took you people so long out there? Trevor, get the goddamn truck inside before Adam Prime, his goddamn self, walks up and asks for a ride. I want Zeiss's report ASAP in."
Lucas froze when he saw Computer Face. His eyes found the body of Commander Zeiss next. Instinctively, his hand shot to his hip and he pulled his magnet pistol, pointing it at Computer Face's head.
"What's this shit?"
Computer Face crossed his arms.
"I've about had it with guns pointed at me today."
Uterus jumped in front of him.
"He's with us, sir. He already saved my life twice. He has nothing left to prove."
Brundy and Mackenzie nodded their approval. Lucas holstered his pistol and motioned for his guards to stand down.
"I'll put a pot of coffee on. I have a feeling you're about to tell me a long story. And General Uterus?"
"Yes, sir."
"Why the hell is he naked?" "A goddamn iPad melted on your face? I've heard of some lucky sons of bitches out there in the shit, but I've never heard of anything like that. Goddamn!"
Computer Face, Uterus, and Trevor sat in the Admiral's chambers. The disfigured man had been fitted with a ratty old RDA uniform, which made him shift uncomfortably in his chair. He'd actually begun to enjoy being naked. Lucas and Uterus sipped coffee while Computer Face explained what he remembered, and Trevor shared his theories about how Computer Face survived his accident.
"Do you know what this means?"
Lucas said, unable to contain his excitement.
With a soldier who can infiltrate the ranks of the machine army without fear of attack, we might actually be able to win this war.
Quickly, the Admiral's smile faded.
Forgive me, son. I don't mean to make light of your situation. It's just...
Lucas put down his coffee and glanced at Uterus as if he wasn't sure he should say what came next.
I shouldn't have said we can win the war. The reality is, we can't win the war, because the war's been lost for years. They've wiped us out, kid. Best I can tell, we're one of the last RDA bases left in the entire country. I've sent scouts out east as far as St. Louis, and the couple who've actually made it back alive didn't see a single living creature past Kansas. Every RDA base they found was gutted, blown up, empty. Not even threshers down there, you understand? Threshers like people. No people, no meat rains.
Lucas shifted in his chair, as if even admitting this much made him uncomfortable.
Best we could tell, the machines began a thorough sweep of the coasts toward the middle of the country about 2 years ago. They've killed everyone, son. The Denver RDA base may in fact be the last base left standing. So no, we can't win a war against 10 million machines with a handful of tired, beat-up soldiers. But with your help, we might just be able to get this to the Quiet Land.
Lucas held up a melon-sized, glowing blue stone.
With us, everything changes.
What is it? Computer Face asked, just looking into the swirling black smoke deep inside the glowing blue stone made him feel woozy. Lucas laughed.
I have no fucking idea.
He put the stone back in his pocket, breaking the momentary spell the weird rock seemed to cast on everyone in the room.
I wasn't always in charge of this base. I've been promoted a few times, just like Commander Uterus here.
She nodded grimly at Lucas, accepting the promotion he'd just given her. The time for formal ceremony was long past.
The soldier in command here when I was first stationed at the base was Admiral Jenkins. Before he ran off and got turned into Thresher Rain, he gave me this stone. Told me it had been given to him by another soldier, and so on. He told me that if we ever found the Quiet Land, if indeed such a place actually existed outside the warped, sadistic mind of Adam Prime, that we needed this stone to pass through to the other side. Otherwise, we might as well be diving headfirst into Thresher Blades. And this was the most important part, he told me. He said to never, ever let the stone fall into the hands of the Machine Army. I've kept it on my person morning, noon, and night ever since.
So the stone is like a key? Computer Face said?
Yes.
And you want me to unlock the gate to the Quiet Land?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but, Computer Face said, standing, you put too much stock in superstition. In spite of what he says, Computer Face pointed to Trevor, fiddling in the corner with his device. I don't believe such a place is real. If we are to survive the Machine Army's relentless attacks, we're going to have to do better than a fairy tale passed on from soldier to soldier.
Let me show you something else,
Lucas said. He and Uterus stood and walked out of the room into the main portion of the hangar. Trevor rose to join them. Computer Face blocked his path. Where were you when the robots attacked? Trevor finally looked away from his device, surprised at the direct question. His unblinking eyes registered a hint of panic.
I was thrown out of the building when the Thresher attacked. I was knocked unconscious for several minutes. When I came to, I ran for the truck.
Computer Face said nothing, nor did he move out of the little man's way.
Come on, Trevor said finally. Wait till you see this.
You're right, of course,
Lucas said after Computer Face had caught up to him. Lucas had a strut that betrayed a youth spent playing sports. He was certainly a high school football player. It wouldn't have surprised Computer Face in the least if the Admiral had played college ball as well before getting the call up from the RDA. He whistled the kind of lame, generic tunes that only people who spent their lives listening to talk and sports radio, but not actual music, whistled. After a moment, the fat, jovial fellow continued.
Sending soldiers on mission after mission to collect dwindling supplies and save a handful of civilians just because we believe in some storybook paradise where technology doesn't exist would be downright irresponsible and ultimately pointless. But,
the Admiral said, passing several more armored vehicles, including a pair of gigantic school buses loaded from top to bottom with thick armor and magnetic cannons.
You tell me what you would do if you were in charge of them.
Lucas opened a door near the rear of the hangar. Inside, more than 50 children sat on the floor watching a pair of soldiers perform some sort of play at the front of the room. The children were all dirty. Some cried even though the soldiers were performing comedy. The war had taken its toll on their fragile forms. One girl near the back, a dark-haired kid with big, soft brown eyes, turned around and smiled. She waved at Computer Face. He flinched back, afraid his face would scare her, but she continued to wave. Astonished, he slowly raised his hand and waved back. She mouthed, "I like your mask," and pointed to his face. Quietly enough not to disturb the other children, she said, "My name's Mitzi. What's yours?"
"Harry," he whispered, dumbfounded. Perhaps there was still hope left in this awful world after all.
Lucas shut the door.
"Commander Zeiss was in charge of finding them. It's amazing how resilient kids are. He found them hiding inside sewer drains, crouched up under ruined bathroom sinks, even buried under the corpses of their dead relatives. 61 young souls. So forgive me if I believe in fairy tales, son. I don't have anything else to tell these kids when they ask me if all the bad robots are gone."
I had no idea," Computer Face said, still in shock.
"Well, now you do. So tomorrow morning, we're going to fill up those buses over there with these precious children. We're going to drive it right to where your brain says the quiet land is supposed to be. And I'd be mighty grateful if you'd lead the way with the glowing blue rock. What do you say, Mr. Computer Face? Would you like to help save humanity from extinction?"
Before he could answer, an all-too-familiar distant boom reverberated throughout the massive hangar.
"No,"
Lucas said, disbelief washing over his dark features.
"Not now! Not when we're so close!"
Boom. Lucas jerked open the door to the children's room.
"Get everyone together! We're leaving now!"
The panicked leader turned to Commander Uterus.
"Load up the trucks! Get as many weapons into them as you can! I want you and your best man in the lead with him!"
he said, pointing to Computer Face.
"Let's do this!"
Boom. Boom. "You heard the boss. Load him up!" Uterus screamed, jogging off toward the nearest truck to start packing up the convoy. Computer Face grabbed a load of magnetic weapons from a nearby table and began to walk it toward a truck when he paused and looked around. There was movement everywhere. Soldiers gathered supplies, loaded weapons, checked tires, and filled gas tanks. But one thing was missing. Computer Face put down the weapons and walked back toward Admiral Lucas's chambers near the front of the hangar. As Computer Face pushed open Lucas's door, he was not entirely surprised at what he found. Sitting in the Admiral's chair, Trevor smiled at him.
You weren't supposed to see this, but then again, you weren't supposed to still be alive."
The short man's eyes were looking at him from the top of a pair of robotic stalks jutting up out of his eye sockets. The eyes rotated and pulsed like little mini satellite dishes. "That's how the Thresher and the Forge found us inside that building, isn't it? You led them right to us." Trevor laughed softly.
"Your unique existence gave us an opportunity to put events into motion that may have otherwise given away my true allegiances."
Computer Face shut the door behind him. "Here they thought I was the spy for the Machine Army, and you've been with them the entire time."
"Not the entire time. I'd only infiltrated this particular nest of humans several months ago, but the turnover is so heavy, no one really seemed to notice. I made myself valuable by seeming to possess a great deal of knowledge about the inner workings of the Machine Army. Commander Zeiss had his suspicions, though. I'd spent too much time with his unit in the field searching for survivors. I was created to look unimposing, but That brings with it inherent limitations to physical strength and dexterity that I seemed to lack in the eyes of our late commander. It was time for him to go.
I'm going to expose you. They're going to know what you've done.
Trevor laughed again, loudly this time. Such loyalty you show to these people. Wait till I give you the rest of your memories. What a fool you think you were, Harry.
Computer Face flinched at the robot's use of his real name. He shrugged the insult aside. Tell me now, the coordinates, where do they lead? Is this whole thing a trap?
Of course it is, Harry,
Trevor said, retracting his eye stalks back into their sockets.
Now let me show you the real Harry Nolan.
Computer Face balled his hands into fists. You're not touching me with that thing again.
Oh, the wires? That was just for show, to make Zeiss and all the others think my abilities were confined to a machine. Your iPad brain has a wireless receiver. All I have to do is this.
Reader fuckers, are you listening to the Watching with Strangers podcast with me, Kevin Strange, and Travis, the Encyclopedia Britannica of cult movies?
Hi, I am.
Are you? What are you listening to, man? What are the kind of movies they're missing by not listening to the show?
Oh, man. Monster Squad?
Monster Squad? The Fred Decker-directed Monster Squad?
Absolutely. That's We've got Nards.
Yes, we do have Nards. What else?
Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall, people probably haven't heard of. Trying to pick something.
that's their problem. Listen to the podcast. Over the Top.
Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. What else?
Out for Justice.
With Steven Seagal. Guys, you're missing these epic 80s movie reviews. They're not all from the 80s, but some of them are, and you should be listening to it. Now fuck off.
Oh, hey, we're back, gang. Back on Reading to Strangers here. Joined once again by co-host, guest co-host Jeremy Maddox. How's it going?
Hello.
So as you mentioned during the break, we left off the last episode. We were going to talk about people trying to psychoanalyze you and try to guess your end game. So let's explore that a little bit before we get into the burning question of is Kevin Strange gonna quit the band and go home?
Well, you know, I did that John Podesta Pizza Party podcast a few weeks ago, and the first hour seemed to go fine with Christoph and myself going back and forth, even though he talked more about you than me, you know, act like he was talking through me to you or something. The first hour seemed okay, even though there were a few things missing that I distinctly remember saying or, you know, happening. Then the second hour turned into this huge just mess, and maybe I really did fall apart in the second hour, but I don't remember stuttering that much, and I don't remember there being that many uhs. And, I mean, at one point I sound like Hansy on the Howard Stern show, and I distinctly don't remember that. And I remember that there one of them says something at one point, and then he says something to the host, Jamie, with a nudge, nudge, wink, wink or something, like they're talking in code about me or something else. Like it was their plan all along, and it could just be me being paranoid. But I think that Jamie edited that second hour intentionally to make me look bad. And if I'm wrong on that, I deeply apologize, but something was not right because I've done those podcasts before with other hosts, and that's the first time I've ever played it back and felt like bothered, like something wasn't right. And you know, you go with your gut. I mean,
well, just listen to you right now. You don't sound like that right now.
Exactly. And the thing is, I told him that he could be totally genuine on this for all I know, but something did not sit well with me on that. And now I understand that they revisited the whole thing with you and I on one of their more recent episodes. I haven't even bothered to listen to it yet. And the reason why is that I feel like I've allocated enough of my time to that little faction of, you know, individuals.
Well, they seem to think that they've managed to row into our stream, and they think that they've managed to sort of co-opt and capture our audience here, and maybe they have. But the thing is, if they want to do commentary on every show we do, and that becomes the focus of their podcast, you know, more power to you guys. But that's, you know, you guys want to say that we won't be successful as a niche of a niche of a niche. What the fuck is that shit? You know what I mean? Like, who's listening to that?
Trying to give me some advice about how. It felt like psychoanalysis, like these big involved paragraphs about how we need to move away from Bizarro, and he's right to a degree, but it just felt like almost like an attempt to divide and conquer, and it would take a lot more than any of them have to do that. And the fact that he consorts with Jeff Burke is enough for me to be skeptical. You know, because it's Jeff Burke, you know.
Jeff Burke being one of the most intolerant individuals I've ever met, and the idea that he's palling around with people who call themselves conservatives and actually believe it is not believable at all. That's totally bogus. Jeff Burke is a closed-minded fuck, sanctimonious closed-minded fuck. Who has never apologized or said he was wrong about anything publicly in the 7 or so years I've known him. And the idea that he could get along so swimmingly with people so ideologically opposed to him is just not reality. And that's why I've been saying all along since you did that show that that's just it's a satirical show. They are they're little hipsters who've never grown out of. You remember maybe 7-8 years ago. It was like 2009, 2010. It's right before social justice sort of destroyed the hipster culture and turned everyone into social justice warriors. There was the hipster culture, right? Where the guys grew beards, said they hated hippies, drank Pabst Blue Ribbon, wore plastic sunglasses and skinny jeans, and rode bicycles in the city. Those guys lived and died on irony, right? Irony was their thing. Their whole identity revolved around this pretentious irony, this I'm going to act like really lame things are awesome because how funny is it that people think I'm really into these lame things? But I'm really into them, man, because like I got to play the part right. Like it was this real like ridiculous multiple levels of satire and self-effacing sort of humor, and I believe that these guys over at the pizza party never grew out of that ironic satire phase, and that they are playing these Stephen Colbert type characters who pretend that they are conservative on this show because they think conservative politics are so ridiculous, right? They think that anybody who would actually believe that stuff is retarded, so they play those characters. And that's why Jeff Burke hangs out with them, because he's in on the joke. That's my take on him. And I've never listened to a single fucking second of their podcast. And I never fucking will.
Well, I'll tell you this. I normally, a few weeks ago, my curiosity would have peaked to see what was said on that most recent episode that featured us as a discussion, dude, or whatever.
We wrecked them so fucking bad. If they didn't come back one more time, then they would have looked like complete fucking, well, they would have looked like what they are, a bunch of fucking retards. But, you know, they're just going to keep, and they'll respond to this too, because I just called them retarded and you know, really bad satire artists.
Well, I do not have any interest in listening to that, the newest episode, because they don't define me.
Fuck no.
And if the worst thing that any of those people have on me, as I said before, is that I choose to live with the people who raised me, that I choose not to date, and I'm from a small town, then they don't have shit on me, and they can go fuck themselves right up their stupid fucking asses.
Who cares if they did have something? Like, why do things on people have any merit on anything? Like, who cares? Like,
Yeah, stay out of our bedrooms.
Our bedrooms, Gary, or Cook. or everywhere else. Stay out of everything. Like
Garrett Cook thinks he's fucking Batman. He's the one that said that you were they weed out deviants from this community, and he's got bad intel on you. There it is. There it is. There's the bombshell or whatever. It was Garrett. And Jeff is covering for him, and I've got the photographic evidence to prove that it was Garrett.
Well, they're all...
I've also got a photographic evidence of him coming to me during Bizarro Gate begging and pleading not to burn him down.
Here we go. You said we couldn't talk... You said we couldn't talk about this publicly, and you just did. You just did. Garrett Cook begged you not to ruin his career. He thought we were coming for him. He thought we were coming for him. He thought that his head was on the chopping block and we were going to expose him as the creepy fuck that he is. Oh, boy.
Hey.
Oh, maybe, boy.
And I know that he'll get this. Maybe he should just zip up his person suit long enough to do business. I'm sure he'll get that.
Oh, man. So this.
I shouldn't have gone there.
Well, you know.
Should we edit it out? I don't know.
No. I don't want to. If you want to, it's your prerogative. But, I mean, fuck them. Who gives a shit? How does it affect your life in any way? Except for logging into the internet. And that's really the where I want to take this conversation. Now, the other day I posted...
This is about you. This is about you, not them.
Well, yeah. No. Well, you know, what is one without the other? What is dark? What is light without darkness?
I'll say this, Strange, before you get going. You're one of the best friends I've ever had, and you snapped me out of my hibernation when no one else could, and many of them tried. I know that they tried. Plenty of people came to me and tried to talk me out of my funk or whatever, from Autumn Christian over to, just all kinds of people. Shane Cartledge tried to motivate me to finish that fucking book that is like a millstone around my neck now. But they tried, but where they failed, you were able to snap me out of it, and you suggested that I pick up a microphone again. And now it's like this podcast, man, has got the creative juices flowing again. I'm even feeling more comfortable writing, you know, and I've almost tuned out that invisible audience that makes me doubt, you know, what I'm putting on paper and everything. The invisible audience. All writers should be attuned to that know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, for sure.
The judges presupposes, you know, that you're doing something wrong.
Yes.
You were one of the best friends I've ever had, man. And it bothered me when you said that you may be done creating. And one of the big overarching reasons is because it feels like throwing in the towel, like you're letting them win, even though you fish hooked them old school and rawhide style on the whole Bizarro Gate issue.
And I can again at the drop of a hat. You and I have talked privately. You know, there's a whole group of these fucking people that I haven't even spoken on, and they sit sweating every week when this show comes out. Is this the week that he's going to fucking throw us under the bus? Is this the week he's going to throw us under the bus? And I choose fucking not to, because the wounds from those guys, I'm talking about you, Don Noble and Nick Day, the wounds go so fucking deep. People, you know, Craig Spector had mentioned on that thread that I said about maybe being done creating. He's like, why do you give these people so much? I mean, this is a niche, like little tiny genre. Like, why do you give these people so much credence? Why do you pay so much attention to them? It's like 200 people. Why does that bother you so much? Here's the thing that most people don't understand. So turn your radios up and listen closely, cat ladies. I've known Nick Day since I was 15 years old. We grew up down the street from each other. I put old Don Noble, he was a dick writing fanboy of mine back when I made movies. Back in 2007, 10 years ago, I put him as an extra, as a zombie extra in one of my zombie movies. I've known these motherfuckers I've known these people, some of them since before there was a Bizarro Fiction. And they followed me into this subculture and then proceeded to rode into the genre on my reputation and then proceeded to try to destroy that reputation, and to this day continue to poke little fucking needles into my reputation and attempt to destroy me and remove me from the genre, from the subculture, after me having opened the fucking door for them with my reputation. It is a deep-seated wound, and to me, it's more than a battle of a public reputation. This goes back to friendships from childhood. This goes back to rivalries over a decade old. There's a lot to this. There's love, passion, betrayal, treachery, cheating, lying. So many dastardly things that have happened to me that I don't talk about publicly. I don't talk about publicly how when, here we go, cat ladies, I'm going to talk about my award nominations again, God forbid. When I was awarded those fucking Wonderland nominations, when I was announced as the as the, a nominee of the 2000, what was it, 2014? It was the year 2015 for the 2014 books. Nobody knows this publicly. Old Don Noble wrote a fucking email trying to convince the upper brass of BizarroCon and the Wonderland Awards to negate my my nominations, to strip me of my nominations. And they had to come to me privately and tell me that this motherfucker had tried to disparage my reputation in private and tried to get my nominations removed. And they told me that it just seemed like a really shallow, petty, jealous move, and that they weren't worried about it, but they thought that I should be aware. So there's so many things like this that you guys don't know about that have happened behind the scenes that I've kept secret. I've kept private because I've been threatened over the internet that if I talk about this stuff publicly, that I would find out what being professional really means. I've had people from halfway across the country threaten me for speaking up and talking about the behind the scenes ways with which these people have tried to destroy my reputation as a way to remove me as competition for themselves. Do you think it's any fucking secret that the very year after Don Noble tried to get me removed from the Wonderland nominations, that his ass started showing up at those fucking awards after in private calling Bizarro retarded and calling Carlton Mellick an awful writer? Whenever I was trying to get him into Bizarro fiction, when I was opening, you know, getting Strange House going and going, yeah, I want to do horror. I want to do some Lovecraftian stuff, but I also want to do this Bizarro thing. This Bizarro thing is really cool, and I want to release some stuff from this, you know, Bizarro fiction genre. Also, here, check this Carlton Mellick guy out. He's the like main guy that writes in this shit. And the dude called him retarded, and now he goes up and hangs out with him and acts like his buddy every year. It's all this fucking deep-seated need to be better than me. It's why he fucked my girlfriend. It's why he goes after guys' girlfriends and shit. It's all this, like,
deep, every time that comes up, he always says she wasn't his girlfriend.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. That's fucking awesome. That's how you fucking frame it, because you're a fucking scumbag. And the thing is these guys are scumbags, and I don't ever fucking talk about it. So when people see me get frustrated, when they see me flip out the way I did the other day and say I might be done create, it's there's so much stuff behind the scenes. So much stuff behind the scenes that that people just don't know about, that I don't talk about. I choose not to air my, like, the really personal stuff.
You have every right to be pissed off. And it never sat right with me when Garrett and others told me to keep an eye on you like I'm some little minion to report back to the Lord of Darkness, you know, or something. And the thing is you weren't the only one, because Garrett said once that they weed out deviants in this community. Oh, really? Bizarro Gate earlier this year? Yeah, man. How does that work? 2015, we weed out sexual deviants in this community. 2017, major deviant discovered, alleged deviant. How does that work?
It doesn't work.
Believe all women.
We've been through this a million times. You can
but
back
they
and
still don't get it.
No, they don't have to get it. They don't have to get it because the proof is out there. Those Bizarro Gate episodes exist. You can go back if you don't know what we're talking about. You can go back and listen to those episodes, early episodes of Reading to Strangers, and find out all about the last year's Bizarro Con debacle, where they attempted to ban for life a guy for having the gall to strike up a conversation with a girl that she chose not to discourage. She chose to go behind his back and gossip to her friends about it until it became this huge thing that he wasn't even aware of until after Bizarro Con happened. That's a whole thing. Bizarro Gate is a whole thing. You know, we've dealt with these people over and over and over and over again. And here's my frustration. Here's the sort of place I was coming from when I made that post the other night. I feel like I'm a sentry now. Like I have to stand guard and never move off of my post to constantly be ready to fight the hypocrisy of social justice, the hypocrisy of the far left liberal ideology, to constantly be on guard and ready to punch back when members of the writing community come after me and my reputation again and again and again. And, you know, I've been doing this show with this level of intensity with, you know, hour and a half, 2.5 hour. Last week's episode was 2 hours and 40 minutes. We've been doing this show with this level of intensity for 26 straight weeks without a break. And you have to understand, these fucking audiobooks that we do in the middle of these episodes, I have to record these audiobooks, edit them together, add the music, and then split those up and put them in here. And I'm not saying feel sorry for me because I have a lot of work to do, because I put this work on myself. But the point is, it's exhausting. It is not my full-time job, and I don't get paid for it. I do this out of an ideological need to just, you know, fucking show these people as the hypocrites that they are, and show that all of this nonsense, moral posturing, and sanctimonious, you know, church lady attitude is all bogus, and none of it holds any water whenever it when you show them, you know, whenever you show things like the Bizarro Gate debacle, how, you know, when it's one of their friends, they suddenly become super skeptic of women. but if it's someone they don't like, if it's a reputation that they seek to destroy, they don't need any evidence at all. They don't need anything but rumor and hearsay, and that's all that matters, because they weed out deviants and they you know, they can't take any chances. There are women at Bizarro Con, and what would happen to those women? It's just nonsense. And I'm tired, Jeremy. I'm tired. 26 weeks in a row of dealing with these people and this stuff at an intense level for an extended period of time. And this week I got really frustrated and I wanted a break. I wanted to be able to step away from this microphone, from my social media, and it not be seen as some kind of loss. And that's where I'm stuck. I feel like a sentry. If I step away from my guard post, that the enemy will storm the gates. Like it's a siege. Like I'm being besieged, and I can never step away. And the moment I step away from this post, that I lose, right? I'm in this never-ending conflict. I would say I'm alone, but I've had your help for the last 6 or 7 weeks, and behind the scenes for the whole time. You know, let's not pretend like you, just because you only recently stepped up to the microphone doesn't mean you haven't been there the whole time. But essentially, I'm standing here fighting off all these people from all these angles, and people see it on my social media, and they make comments like, "How do you fucking handle all this shit from all these people all the time?" And the truth is, nobody could. Nobody could handle that kind of negativity and that kind of pressure. And I am breaking. I'm breaking.
Have you ever noticed? Well, I have to make this point. Have you ever noticed people listening who may not be so sympathetic towards Strange? Kind of fill out Strange's page and notice how all these people have to come on his page to argue with him. He doesn't go on other people's pages and stir all this shit up. You know, he just wants his, you know, area to express himself. He doesn't go and dictate how others are to communicate with the world at large or whatever. It's always these people stepping up, like the guy who from West Virginia who was simultaneously proclaiming himself a world famous poet, a victim of MK Ultra experimentation, and suddenly randomly identifying with Bizarro, all while I was a co-editor at Surreal Grotesque magazine. So, and suddenly he says, "I don't think, judging by your behavior the last few months, that you know what counterculture is." Counterculture is what runs current. It runs against what is popular and
But don't you know, Donald Trump has been in office for 3, 4, 5 months, 6 months now, almost 7. That means that conservative culture is the popular culture because of the guy in the White House. That's nonsense. It's nonsense. The popular culture has been psycho-liberal social justice for years, as evidenced in the first part of this podcast when you brought up the fucking Tony Stark line and Joss Whedon having to flee from Twitter back in 2000. What was that? 2014, 2015?
Yeah, 14.
You know, fuck trying to act like conservative culture. I've been talking about this for years. It's like you try to kick up the ghosts of Christian conservatives in the 1990s. It hasn't been the 1990s for a long, long time. And counterculture today is counter to liberal, crazy social justice. And anyway, this got me thinking, right? This week I became very tired. I faced having to do these podcasts, I want to. This is all, nobody has to do anything here. This is all out of a passion. This isn't my job. I don't get paid for this. But I faced off against this week going, you know what? I'm fucking tired. I don't want to do this. I just want to be able to shut it all down and shut it off. I released an article on my website back in November or December talking about what happens when you are in the middle of a social media witch hunt. And one of the pieces of advice I give is shut it all down. Shut it all down. If you're being harassed on the internet, bullied on the internet, mobbed on the internet, turn off the fucking phone. And it's over, right? It's over for as long as you want it to be over. And it doesn't start again until you want it to. And I did that myself. I did that myself back in November. I logged out of Facebook and didn't log back in until like 3 months ago. But now I started this podcast because I needed to give a voice to be able to shut down Jeff Burke and Garrett Cook and try to get my reputation back from Don Noble and Nick Day, trying to somehow salvage my identity, the identity that I created a long time ago, that they rode into this business on top of, where guys like Garrett Cook were my best friends when I was publishing them in anthologies because they thought I could help their careers, and then their worst enemies once their buddies decided to start talking shit on me in private. Again, this is all in private. You would never know. You know, Don Noble's everybody's best friend in public. The guy's a fucking snake in private. You know, the whole Riot Forge debacle was born out of an attempt to take every writer that worked for Strange House at the time and sign them to these ludicrous 100% royalties deals where he would literally buy their book cover art for them and then not charge them for any editing, not charge them for any book formatting, not charge them for any of the job, literally doing the job of publishing for free in an attempt to take all of the authors off of Strange House and bankrupt and destroy the company that I started, the publishing house that I started. And continued to do so to the point that I eventually sold the company off and was like, you know what, dude? fuck you. You can't do this to me if I don't even own the fucking thing. Ironically, then he bought it back and now he owns Strange House as, again, as this He's got to have my girl. He's got to have my business. He's got to have my identity. I've said in the past, you know, the guy's going to kill me and wear me as a Kevin Strange suit. He's so fucking into my career. And he has been all the way back when he was a fucking fanboy, a bullshit fanboy, begging me to put him in movies. You know, it's, you know, the dude, has done a great job. You know, let's not take away how good of a junior high girl he is. You know, the junior high girls like to destroy each other's reputations, right? You can't sit with us. We're the popular girls. He's done a pretty good job of making me unpopular, hasn't he there, Jeremy Maddox?
I don't pay attention to what's popular, man. I don't know if you've noticed, but I have this habit of posting female wrestlers on Facebook, which no one understands, but yet they still ogle. So I don't really care what's popular at all.
You get some good poses there, buddy. Some real good poses. Anyway, so this week I was like, you know, I just don't want to fucking do this anymore. And not that I don't, you know, again, I made the post, I might be done creating. The fact of the matter is I haven't written a single word of fiction in about 3 months. And this is one of the longest dry spells I've ever had. And I don't have writer's block. It's not a problem of having ideas or the words to tell those ideas. I'm a very blue collar writer. I can write with fucking sledgehammers hitting the street outside my house, jackhammers digging into the concrete. I don't care. I wrote a whole book in a public McDonald's. That stuff doesn't bother me. I can write anywhere, anytime. But when I don't want to, I don't. And I haven't wanted to in 3 months. And that's a problem because that's what I do. That's how I interface with the world. That's how I vent my frustrations. That's how I keep my crazy locked up. Jeremy, you've had to deal with it this week. How many phone calls have you dealt with of me just ranting this week, of just being crazy?
I mean, it just part of the course. I mean, I'm used to it. We talk just about every day. So, I mean, it just kind of all blurs together.
I don't have to do that all the time. If I'm creating, if I'm putting my creative energy into something fulfilling, I don't go crazy like that. And I've gone pretty nuts because I haven't written anything or created anything in a few months. And I don't, again, when I said I might be done creating, I don't know why I phrased it like that, because that's disingenuous. And I don't like to say things that are disingenuous, but, I don't want to have to do this podcast every week, period. I don't want to have to. I don't want to have to talk about this every week of my life. I've done it 26 weeks in a row, and physically I'm breaking down. My physical health, as our buddy Don Noble loves to brag about on the internet, any chance he gets, that my physical health is waning. And
they love to kick around people who are ill or not in the best physical shape. That proves that they're evil.
Just bullies. Bullying.
I just want to make something clear. You say you don't want to do a podcast every week, but I mean, the Quiet Place is safe. Can we at least?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the, you know, you called me the other night in a panic saying, man, are you going to cancel my podcast? I'm loving doing this. I'm just getting my feet, you know, I'm just getting my, hitting my stride. And yeah. I assured you that that's not the case. And so I want to make a bunch of changes. Is what I'm getting at. I want to make a bunch of changes as a creator, as a human being, as a person who needs to get their physical health up front here as a priority. I want, and I've been thinking on this all week, I want to create a way that the Strangeville Podcast Network can thrive without the demand of me having to sit guard in front of this microphone every single week if I don't want to. If I want to take a month off, if I want to take a month vacation because I'm sick, you know, physically ill because I work too much and I work too hard, I want to be able to do that without it being seen as some victory for my detractors. And that was really bothering me this week. You and I had a real intense phone call the other night where I was saying, when do I get to stop? Do I ever get to stop? Is it ever over? Is this siege warfare? Have I entered into a fight I can't win? You know, we had a...
I mean, that's not up to me. I mean... I've done far less and accomplished far less than you, and I took a break, a very extended break. So, and I'm just now, you know, getting back to where I was somewhat. So I understand you need a break, but I mean, of course they're gonna see it as a victory no matter what, and I guess it's just we're just gonna have to say fuck them.
Well, what about the three books I'm releasing later this year? Like I've got one book about to come out right now. It's in the final editing stages, and I'm about to get the final cover art. Yeah, for Beetle Brain, the cover art is about 75% finished. I've been working with the cover artist over the last few months to get this cover art looking great. I'm working with Will Scar again, who did the cover for I Died in a Bed of Roses, which I released this year. So 26 weeks of a podcast, absolutely annihilating and destroying the moral high ground of Bizarro Fiction, criticizing to, I think, a great degree their convention, their award, and their Writers Association, all in good ways, in offering good criticism for how to grow their genre into a place where maybe people can actually make money off of it that aren't named Carlton Mellick. Who I consider a friend, who is one of my greatest inspirations as a writer. I don't say that as a criticism. I say that because it's true. I have to reiterate that all the time because they always take it the wrong way.
They never listen to the prefaces.
Right.
Prefaces.
And then releasing possibly three, if not four, books in a year. That's all a loss because I take a break from my podcast. That's all a victory for my detractors. Like, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of things I've done in a very short amount of time. And it's going to be a loss because I stopped. Like, it's like because I hit record on a microphone once, I can't ever stop or they win. I think I've won time and time again. I think I could have hung up the microphone after Bizarro Gate and walked away and been fine.
Well, you know, ultimately, it's up to you as long as the Quiet Place is safe, you know. But the thing is, we can stop talking about them anytime you want. And I mean, I don't need to talk about them to make good radio anymore. So, I mean, we can stop talking about them forever, anytime you want to.
This is the kind of, and that's why I told the whole story. I didn't tell the whole story, but I kind of went into why this is personal to me and how far back this goes and how deep these wounds go. It's not about whether or not I want to talk about individuals. It's about whether I want to talk at all. These podcasts take a long time to record and edit. And, you know, I'm spending hours of this is my day off of my regular job. And here I am. And these podcasts are exhausting. I mean, they take a lot out of me. Like, I have to rest and eat and drink a lot of water after I do these shows because I'm ranting and screaming and yelling. I'm not reading off any paper. This is all improvisational, and it's hours of improv every week. And I don't do one show. I do two shows, sometimes three shows, with an overrun extra show that goes to Patreon. You know, it's like I work my ass off. And again, I'm not asking anybody to say, oh, you work hard, bro. I'm not asking for that. If you don't know me well enough to know that I never fish for compliments. I don't want your compliments. I don't want your pity. I don't want your sympathy. I'm simply explaining why I deserve to be able to walk away from this for as long as I want to, whenever I want to, and not consider myself a loser because I've done so. And so here's the idea, and Jeremy hasn't heard this idea at all. Nobody's heard this idea. I want to expand the network to its own website. And Jeremy, you'll be one of the moderators of that website so that you can upload your own shows to it. And we will actually have a master. You'll be able, so if you subscribe to The Quiet Place, you subscribe to Reading to Strangers, maybe you just subscribe to Watching with Strangers also, maybe you subscribe to Ranting at Strangers. I also want to start a Warhammer podcast called Strangehammer 40K, where I can talk about my battle reports, my hobby progress on my models. I've really passionately gotten into this hobby of wargaming over the last few months, and there's a lot to talk about there's a bunch of different Warhammer podcasts, and I want to be able to talk about that too. But what if someone doesn't want to have to subscribe to each of these things individually? If we have a master website with a master iTunes feed. People can subscribe to our individual shows if they just want individual shows, or they can subscribe to the master feed where every single episode of every single show gets uploaded into a master stream. So you only have to subscribe to one channel and you'll get everything. And you'll be able to listen to all the episodes of The Quiet Place, Reading to Strangers, Ranting at Strangers, Watching with Strangers, Strangehammer 40K, and any other. I'm going to buy a van here soon and trick out the inside, put solar on it, put batteries in it, and I'm going to fucking drive this van all across the country having adventures. And that's one of the reasons why I want to be able to walk away from this podcast anytime I want. I'm really going to record audiobooks and weekly podcasts while I'm trying to have adventures on the road. I think not.
Now, I know you've brought this up before about how you eventually wanted to explore the minivan lifestyle where
people have these
elaborate setups in their minivans and RVs, and there's a whole community, that ugly word community. It's a whole lifestyle. There are a lot of people who do this and they just go on the road. Now, I mean, the issue would be having to use public restrooms all the time, lack of access to shower. And what about Rocco?
Well, you have the thing about it is there's a lot of clever ways to handle those kind of things. Like if you get a Planet Fitness membership, which is only like $20 a month, they have them in every major city and every suburb in America. And so you can walk into any one of them and take a shower and use the restroom. That's sort of a public, I mean, you can call it a public restroom, but it's a private restroom in a business. You know what I mean? You can't use it unless you're a club member. So it's not necessarily private bathroom facilities, but it's better than a Walmart restroom. But you can also use those. So you can actually shower every day at a different Club Fitness as you drive along the road. It's not some dirty hippie lifestyle. You can live it that way. You can live the van life like a dirty hippie, or you can live it clean and sanitized and you can basically make it whatever you want to make it. And I don't want to have to be sort of chained down to a podcast every single week if I don't want to. And I'll probably have a van life podcast on the network where while I'm on the road, I'll make recordings that later, once I come home from the adventure, I will upload my diary, basically, of my road diary into a series of podcasts. You know, this network can expand and become something really big without me being chained to the microphone every single week and recording these audiobooks every single week. The way I envisioned Reading to Strangers in the beginning was that I would record an audiobook and then release that audiobook in parts. And that was Reading to Strangers. A little bit of my introduction or some behind the scenes, how I came up with the idea, all the origin of stuff, and then a little bit of prepping for the next week's episode at the end. But Reading to Strangers was never meant to be this. It was never, you know, these episodes routinely go an hour and a half, 2 hours, 2 hours and 40 minutes last week because we're cramming an audiobook in there. I always want to put my audiobooks out. That's the whole point of Reading to Strangers, is for my audiobooks. Ranting at Strangers was for all this. And
this is how it's done though, man. This is radio. This is good radio.
But this can be done on Ranting at Strangers without people having to listen to the audiobook.
Yeah.
The audiobook can be its own separate feed for people who want to listen to the audiobook. If you want to listen to both, you can subscribe to the master feed or subscribe to both of the different channels. You know what I'm saying? Like creating these. And when I finish an audiobook, I don't have to immediately start another one. I can wait a month and a half, 2 months before I begin to upload the next serialized episode. Being chained to this thing every week, and I chained myself to it, right? I'm not looking for sympathy. I put this together this way, but it's time to change it. It's time to get to a point where I don't have a weekly schedule where I am forced to sit in front of the microphone instead of relaxing and de-stressing from all of the negativity that comes my way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that. I get the whole wanting to go on the road and have adventures, because there was a time when I started reading Jack Kerouac my senior year where I thought about doing that, but later in my mid-20s, I realized that I really just like to shut everybody out and stay home. I'm a homebody. I'm reclusive. It's just my nature. It doesn't mean I'm missing out on life. It just means that my mind, my imagination is so big that I can confine it to one room and never run out of things to explore in my mind. But the thing is, I know how, now I know, I've been through some of the same battles that you have now, so I understand how much it weighs on you with these rivalries. And the thing is, yeah, I almost have to thank those guys at the John Podesta Pizza Party podcast, because now I know what it's like to have like an inter-podcasting like war going on, and it I always wondered what it would feel like to be the center of that kind of heat, and now I know. But I also know how it takes a toll on your health, and you have had problems with high blood pressure, and you think you might have problems with your gallbladder now. Yeah, so I understand that you need to decompress. It's just, it makes me concerned that, you know, the future of my show that you talked me into doing again would be in jeopardy at some point, even though, you know, you said that it will always have a contingency plan.
Well, like I said, if we start that master website for the Strangeville Podcast Network and you're an administrator of it, you can upload all your shows yourself. You don't even need me to do that. Yeah. Right?
Well, yeah. Who's gonna pay for it?
I mean, oh, me. Don't worry about that. I'm not asking you to pay for anything. You know that. We've talked about that privately many times. That's not a concern at all. Don't worry about that. Because 90% of the shows are mine. I'm gonna pay for the network. So you'll always have a spot for, you know, no matter how long. If I disappear for 6 months, your show is not in jeopardy at all. Your show won't be in jeopardy at all.
Well, I know. I think maybe I'm better built for these, you know, battles with the podcasts, because I have a masochistic streak a mile long, you know.
Well, imagine though, if this stuff was happening with old high school rivals and shit, like this goes way personal for me, way personal. Imagine if the people you were doing battles with, you know, like conspired behind your back to ruin one of your favorite relationships you've ever had, you know, take the woman you love from you on purpose, to do so on purpose, maliciously, and with the intent to humiliate and emasculate you. You know, these things are like, this is really personal.
It's horrible. And I just have to reiterate, I have to emphasize this, that these people have to hang out on your page to get to you. You don't go looking for them generally. You might express an opinion somewhere, but they have to come looking for you. They have to go out of their way to bother you.
They have to convince you to go on a podcast to then talk shit on me through you. It's bizarre the links that these people will go to get to me.
Clearly, you are a threat. You are threatened. You have threatened them more than they care to admit.
For sure. And you have too, which is why they come to you privately and say, listen, man, let me give you some advice. If you really want to be successful, why are you going to, you know, you don't go give the competition advice for how to be better than them. That guy's a fucking, the guy tried to come to me privately too. And they all have, you know what I'm saying? They all come to me privately and tried to fucking, from Nathan Carson to Garrett Cook to all of these guys, have tried to come to me privately and do this shit, this psychological warfare in private, you know, this divide and conquer in private. And I'm not talking about recently as far as those guys. You know, the recent interaction with Nathan Carson. I haven't talked to Garrett Cook since I made fun of him for calling Game of Thrones rape culture, and he blocked me from Facebook. But you know, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, in his love struck heartbroken stupor, he puked on your shoes, and you cleaned him up in the bastard still.
Nobody cares about that stuff, Jeremy. Nobody cares what I've done for them in private. Nobody cares about the late night phone calls I've had with authors' girlfriends about their mental health and how to get them into a facility and get them help for schizophrenia. Nobody cares about that stuff. They only care about the bad stuff. I am a bad person because they say so, and know nothing good. And if I say anything good about myself, I'm a narcissist. Right? What was that bizarre? What was that crazy fucking thread on my Facebook where the tranny squad showed up telling me that I'm not allowed to tell a story about a communist kid that shows up on my doorstep looking for help and then never acknowledges that I helped him? Well, you shouldn't ask for accolades for your good deeds. Motherfucker, it wasn't asking for anything. It was pointing out that these people are scumbags and that I never get credit for the good things I've done for these people.
These sons of bitches, I swear, I just can't emphasize enough how they're allowed to go around gossiping and trying to quote-unquote weed people out and get bad intel on people like they're fucking Batman. And you just express yourself on your page or on a podcast, and it is nuclear warfare. Who the hell do these people think they are? And as Craig Spector said, you know, they're big fish in a small pond. Most people don't care what they think on the level that we have built them. We have built them up, Strange, and we have to take the power, all the power we gave them back.
Well, again, I challenge anyone listening to try to put themselves in my shoes. And you've got a group of people who claim to be your best friends that you've known most of your life, who claim to have your best interest in mind, who claim to want to help you build a publishing empire, who then once they've ridden into the publishing world on your reputation, then systematically dismantle that reputation and try to remove you as their competition by going so far as to pay people to leave your publishing house to write for them. You know, what can you do? You're saying I've built them up. I have to do something. I have to do something. I can't, as a prideful person, as a person with self-respect, I can't let that happen to me. I can't let my entire reputation be systematically taken from me and just let it and just walk away from it. I can't. I can't. And I challenge anyone listening to put themselves in my shoes and ask yourselves how you would handle this long term. You know, what is the exit strategy? What is the plan to walk away from this? I don't know. I just want the world to know what happened to me. I want people who have heard my name dragged through the mud to understand why it has been. I want people to see the snaky fucks that call themselves their friends. I want them to see them for the snakes they are.
And if it can happen to you, it can happen to them.
And if it happened to me, it can happen to anybody. And Jeremy, you and I, one of the first things that solidified our friendship way back in the day was conversations that we had about these social witch hunts, these reputation attacks, the reputation assassination of authors and stuff. I told you way back in the day, brother, don't dogpile in with these people when this stuff happens, because one day it might just be fucking you.
Yeah, these people don't believe in liberty. They don't understand the concept of privacy in the way that America was built. They don't understand privacy and rights and respecting their own boundaries. You know, someone may be a terrible person, but if they're not physically, you know, harming someone, then what right do you really have? You know. And this is just us pushing back. They can be
right. It's just a pushback. Yeah, it's right. It's just a pushback is all it is. This is a response to what's fucking happened to me, to what has happened to me. And I've been threatened to never speak about this. I have been threatened to never bring this stuff up. They go fucking nuts. Watch how crazy shit gets because I've mentioned Don Noble and Nick Day on this podcast. Finally, after 26 weeks. Watch how fucking crazy.
If the person who threatened you is who I think it is. I was witness to some things in Oregon, you know, that they would not be flattering to them.
So anyway, that's my exit strategy. I want to change up the way these podcasts are run and the frequency with which they're run. I want to be able to do Reading to Strangers as it was originally intended. I want to be able to take these rants over to Ranting at Strangers and not do them weekly, but do them whenever they need to be done. Maybe it will be weekly because there's enough to talk about. Maybe it'll be bi-monthly. Who knows how often it'll happen. But the fact of the matter is, when I've had enough and my health, physical health is and my mental health is in danger, I want to be able to turn this fucking thing off and walk away and not have to worry about it. I want my buddy Jeremy Maddox's show to be able to go on without to go off without a hitch and be able to go on for as long as he wants it to. And anyone else who joins the Strangeville Podcast Network over time, my absence should not hinder anyone else's ability to work and create. And so over the next few months, you're going to see some changes, but they're all for the good. They're all for my mental health, my physical health, and I think the good of the network. I think the network will grow and flourish under these changes that maybe we should have implemented from the very beginning. I don't know.
I'm glad that you're kind of backpedaling on the whole never create again thing, but I mean, the concept of going on the road in an RV and liking it, that's, I couldn't do it, man. I like my comfort too much. I like my privacy too much. But I mean, I get why you would want to. I couldn't do it.
What we talked about in private, I told you, I spend so much time ranting and yelling and making Facebook posts of trying to help steer this country back in the right direction and get people to understand the moral hypocrisy of the left and how they've become the new church ladies, as Jim Goad coined them, the great Jim Goad, who you might get on the Quiet Place one day, maybe.
I think he's starting up a podcast of his own. But yeah, I'm going to be reaching out to him soon. Yeah.
The fact is, I spend so much time fighting for the future of this country. There's so much of it I haven't seen. I have to get out there. I have to physically touch this country. I have to go see those monuments in the South before they're destroyed forever. I have to go see the great wonders of the West. I've never been to California. I've never been to Colorado. I have friends all over this country and this world whom I've never met in person that I want to be able to physically touch. And I can't do that from in front of this microphone all the time. So I am unchaining myself from the weekly grind of this podcast only to flourish and adventure and become a better person. And if that, my friend, is considered a loss by my detractors, then I hope to be the biggest loser in the world. Jeremy, do you have anything else before we go?
Yeah, Bizarros, we can finish this whenever you guys want to. You need to concede some things and admit where you were wrong. And we can table this discussion once and for all. But you need to back off of my friend Kevin Strange because he is not the devil you have painted him as. And I'm fucking sick of it. Fuck you guys.
All right. With that, we will catch you next week with part 7 of Computer Face. And we may change up the format for that. Or maybe I'll continue to do this through Computer Face and then change the format afterwards. I haven't decided yet. I'm leaning towards next week, Computer Face. You're just going to get Computer Face. I'm going to do a small intro, do the episode, do a small outro. Next week's episode might only be 30 minutes long because that's what Reading to Strangers was designed to be. And then when we have to talk about matters of cultural relevance, we will do so on Ranting at Strangers. Those changes might happen as soon as next week. So until next time, gang, I hope you understand the changes we're making are positive. I hope you don't see this as a loss, but if it is a loss, I hope I'm the biggest loser on the fucking planet because I'm about to live my dream life. We will catch you on the other side. Remember to keep
reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.